From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm Alliance President Emeritus Rabbi Jack Moline in Washington.
The religious impulse, the religious experience is both intensely personal and also social. And so recognizing that I may have very strong convictions about the truth for me, but that truth is not going to be the same for everyone. And so how do I figure out a way to construct a society where my neighbor's beliefs are as importantly recognized as my own?
This month, the Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch takes his seat as the next president of Interfaith Alliance. At such a critical moment for true religious freedom in this country and for democracy itself, you'll hear part two of a conversation among Paul and two presidents emeriti of the Alliance, Reverend Welton Gaddy and me. Looking back at 24 years of cumulative history leading the organization, as well as 16 years of State of Belief Radio.
The battle before us is now even bigger than the battle behind us. So here we go. I'll let that stand as a thematic statement, and from my heart, a devotional statement. A gratitude to God, and also gratitude to so many of God's people who have helped to make this day possible.
Some people really thought the political religious right would declare mission accomplished after eviscerating Roe v. Wade. O ye of little cynicism. At least for the influential Southern Baptist Convention, this was just the beginning, just a sign from above that they're doing God's work. A comprehensive look at what makes them so convinced and what they openly are setting their sights on next recently appeared in The Nation magazine under the headline, "The Southern Baptist Convention's Deal with the Devil." And we'll hear from the author, investigative journalist Sarah Posner.
What we're looking to do is, if you come in to helphereheal.org, we have a Get Help link, and within 3 to 5 days, you are going to have your first appointment. I think that when you've decided to make that step, it's urgent to follow up and get you in for those services immediately.
Legal remedies for people sexually abused as children are notoriously difficult to come by. But more difficult still is accessing the support and treatment necessary for recovery by survivors. One man stepping up to create a solution for those most in need is Todd McKay, founder of Help Hear Heal. And we'll get a look at this new initiative on this week's State of Belief Radio.
I'm Ray Kirstein at the intersection of religion, government, and If It Walks Like a Duck. Last week, the hilariously named Family Research Council's All-Star Pray Vote Stand Summit offered a predictable torrent of anti-Biden, anti-gay, anti-diversity, and anti-democratic talking points. But as a bellwether of the ever-widening self-serving definition of religious freedom and assumed supremacy of Tony Perkins-style authoritarian Christianism, the panel on ESG stood out. Why, you might ask, is a multi-million dollar dark money outfit demanding church status for tax purposes devoting time at a midterm election year summit to bashing corporate, environmental, social, governance policies on race? By now, the only answer possible is because they can. And bringing their obedient supporters together around race bashing says a lot more about these white nationalist theocrats than I, or even the SPLC's designation of FRC as a hate group, ever could. A number of faith leaders have taken notice of Florida, Texas, and Arizona governors heartlessly kidnapping undocumented migrants and wasting millions of dollars to fly or bus them across the country in a political stunt that requires a certain level of savagery to applaud. But in the face of loud applause from the savage right, the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops called the act disconcerting, and a Texas bishop tweeted that, quote, "The degrading disrespect with which immigrants are treated in this country, like pawns in games of political showmanship, is a disgrace." Ron DeSantis of Florida, Greg Abbott of Texas, and Doug Ducey of Arizona are all self-identified Catholics. Whatsoever you do, brothers. And with nothing else to do, and the seemingly limitless resources of far-right law firm Liberty Counsel at her disposal, homophobia poster child Kim Davis continues to clog the courts with appeals purportedly aimed at clearing her name. These motions are important to watch because even her filings articulate that the landscape for what gets to be called religious freedom, footnote see the artist formerly known as Bigotry and Discrimination, is shifting so rapidly that what was clearly illegal 7 years ago ought now to be recognized as a constitutionally protected expression of Davis's deeply held religious beliefs. And I shouldn't snark that Davis has nothing else to do. Why, just a few years ago, she was touring places like Romania as the world's spokesmonster against marriage equality when that country's parliament was trying to preemptively pass a one-man, one-woman referendum. P.S. It failed.
Our program airs every weekend on radio stations nationwide and is available as a podcast on iTunes and other leading podcast platforms. I urge you to subscribe to it today. State of Belief Radio is made possible in great part by the generous support of our listeners. If you've made a donation this week, please let me say a very heartfelt thank you. If you haven't pitched in yet, information on how you can help keep this show on the air is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. And now to our first guests. The Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch is the newly minted president of Interfaith Alliance. A writer, editor, and religious activist, Paul has spent time in academia as well as leadership positions at Huffington Post Religion and BeliefNet. The non-sectarian nature of that work made it inherently interfaith. After years in a senior position at Auburn Seminary, most recently Paul was with Interfaith America. Paul is in New York City. State of Belief listeners certainly know longtime host Reverend Welton Gaddy well. President of Interfaith Alliance from 1998 to 2015, Welton joins us from his home in Monroe, Louisiana. And I had the pleasure to lead Interfaith Alliance from 2015 until earlier this year. So we've got a lot of institutional memory in this conversation. I don't want it to be just an interview, rather a discussion that explores how Interfaith Alliance was born for a time such as this, and how stories and public conversations can help engage Americans with the critical work of defending true religious freedom and democracy itself. Welton and Paul, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.
You know, I'm a long way from being 21 years old. Welton, you're just a little farther away, and Paul, you're significantly closer. But I wonder what each of us would say to the 21-year-old version of ourselves just about to embark on adulthood, knowing what you know now, and what that 21-year-old would think of the person you've become. Welton?
I would say don't fear change. Don't fear going somewhere you've never gone. Be open to it. If you need to say, no, I don't want to do that, okay, but if you find what's new, it's like finding a new God. It's knowing what all of this is about. And I don't ever, ever want to go back.
Paul, what about you?
I was a religion major who was using a lot of drugs and drinking a lot of alcohol and really interested in rock and roll. And I had a record company. I guess that would have been in a couple of years. So I majored in religion. my line was, I want to major in something I will never use. I didn't want to be I was like, okay, I'm at a liberal arts school. I'm going to major in something that I will never use professionally. And, it's like God laughs. Follow your heart. Care for yourself as much as possible, and believe that this yearning is real, this yearning for connection, this yearning for a divine, some kind of connection with the divine, and trust that. And you're going to go through it, but you're going to come out and you're going to know more. And I don't regret a single day of that. And part of my recovery was how I got here, which was a long, I spent a long time coming to grips with addiction. And that was in 25. And here I am. Gosh, I can't do the math. 33 years later. But, it is, it's been a blessing. And you're never beyond the reach of the divine is basically what I would tell my 21-year-old self. And I think I knew that. But I had a lot of journey to go through before I got here.
Nice, nice. And Jack, what about you? Thanks, Jack, for asking that question. I think I probably would have told my 21-year-old self, let yourself be loved. I didn't realize how hard I was resisting it back then. And I think that even though it took me probably close to 40 or 50 years to come around to it, I would have been admiring of how it eventually was worth it when I finally let go and stopped trying to prove myself and just let myself be accepted.
That's
a good thing. So this is a question for both of you, for all of us, really. How does the role of the faith leader and the intimate way that leads us to connect with some of the people we serve equip us to better understand the needs of society as a whole? Paul, what do you think?
The religious impulse, the religious experience is both intensely personal and also social. And so recognizing that I may have very strong convictions about the truth for me, but that truth is not going to be the same for everyone. And so how do I figure out a way to construct a society where my neighbor's beliefs are as importantly recognized as my own, and that we can live together in a way that mutually offers dignity and also a way to function together? And I think that's where we are in some ways, you know, at a crossroads right now, is figuring out the way we can be together even if we disagree. And so the fact that I've served people in a pastoral capacity that have needs that maybe other people may not quite understand. And maybe I can offer a way for a wider swath of a society to understand what it is to be either LGBTQ or perhaps another, you know, being in deep conversation with people with different immigration status. What does that do for me in a way that I can help society understand without taking over someone else's voice, why this is an important religious issue and not purely a secular function?
And Welton, you pastored a church in Monroe, Louisiana, going back there almost every Sunday when you were president of Interfaith right. Alliance. What was it about that equipped you to serve the needs of society as a whole in a better situation?
I didn't know how it would go, but it went fine. You know that. What happened with me was I learned from the show something that I had never thought about. I thought I would be walking away from what I was doing in the pulpit. And I found that people who are not religious want to know about religion. They want to, because they're actually wanting to look at it and see what's going to come on next and what they might have to fight, like how they can be who they are and we can be who we are. And I wouldn't ever not want to have gone there, because I found more people in other religions helping me than I would ever imagine. And Jack, I'll just take you for an example. I will never forget the kind of conversations that you and I had about where I came from and where you came from. And in the hardest times, you ministered to me when our son died. You ministered to me in a way that nobody else could. Now, I want to live in a kind of world in which people reach out to each other in that way.
Thank you, Welton. Thank you for saying that, and thank you for being so open and honest about that. There are conversations, Paul, that you should be having with Welton and with me in private. But what can these two old guys share with you that would benefit our listeners right now on the air.
That's great. And I was totally unprepared for it. And so I'm going to go with my, what is the essential DNA of Interfaith Alliance? How would you describe it? What is the sine qua non, the building blocks of this organization, so that we can, you know, so that that feels really present?
What do you think, Welton?
I think it's what we talk about a lot. We want to know how to bring religion, politics, and society together. How can we bring this? Because honestly, where we are now, we need that more than ever before, as I see it.
Great.
So, Paul, I'm going to answer your question about the DNA of Interfaith Alliance is sort of my parting words, too. I know that there are probably heads of other organizations that would disagree with what I'm about to say, but I really believe it. Interfaith Alliance is the only organization in America right now that faithfully believes in the Constitution and constitutionally believes in faith. And that's what makes us unique among all of the advocacy groups. As a matter of deeply held belief of principles that I think are defensible, we believe that the Constitution guarantees freedom of conscience for people who are both adherents of religion and who just simply have a philosophy of life that doesn't fit neatly into a religious context. And I also believe that the people who are willing to join in this effort with us are people whose faith demands that they seek the common good. And that means supporting the guarantees and the structures that our Constitution demands for creating a more perfect union. That's what makes us unique, and that is what has enabled us to maintain our mission and keep in our lane through the enormous changes that have happened in American society in the 26, 27 years that Interfaith Alliance has had the privilege of mixing in the public conversation. So
Thank you so much.
Because I think that's the essential effort that we have.
Exactly. May I just say one quick thing before we go? You know, when you've done something for a long time and you have work that is everything in your life that you want to happen, and then you retire, that's hard when you don't know what's going to come next. And how what comes next helps what you've done or what else. This time, I can now breathe because Jack and now Paul know exactly what this is about. And I breathe healthily to know that. And I will always be as helpful as I can be with you, Paul.
That means so much to me. And I look forward to speaking to you many times in the future. And I appreciate your blessing.
Welton, keep breathing. That's all I want from you. Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch is president and CEO of Interfaith Alliance, defending true religious freedom for all. At 10 o'clock a.m. on Wednesday, September 28th, Paul will host a briefing on Capitol Hill entitled Christian Nationalism on the Ballot, featuring Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, Reverend Dr. Richard Cizik of Evangelicals for Democracy, Connie Ryan of Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, Wajahat Ali, author, commentator, and activist, and voting rights advocate Taylor Coleman. For information about joining the live stream of this event, please visit interfaithalliance.org. Paul and Welton, thank you for taking this time to get together. I wish we had another hour or two to do this.
Thank you both. This has been an absolute pleasure,
Thank you, Paul. We need to take a quick break, but we're just getting started with this week's show. Up next, investigative journalist Sarah Posner. Her new piece in The Nation is headlined, The Southern Baptist Convention's Deal with the Devil. And later, Todd McKay, founder of Help, Hear, Heal. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance.